socket, using a boot sole on the forehead for leverage, when he heard fast approaching footfalls coming his way. Wiping the knife in the sand before replacing it up his sleeve, he moved quickly to cover. When Ryan rounded a turn in the channel and saw the patch of churned up bloody sand just ahead, he waved for the others to halt.
Benji?
Ryan tried to keep her from rushing forward, but she was so determined to get past him that he couldn't stop her without risking injury to her or the baby. She slipped under his outstretched arm, but ran only a few steps more, stopping well short of the body that lay twisted on the ground. Uta's eyes went wide with shock.
No. No, it can't be. No.
She drew the baby more tightly to her breast. As soundless as a shadow, Jack stepped from the concealment of the tree line, his blaster lowered.
Ears.
A look passed between Jack and Uta, and she knew in an instant that he was telling her the truth. She let out a soft little cry and sank to her knees in the sand. How many?
Counted 18 left, maybe more.
The new widow's grieving had to wait. Death for all was very close. Everybody into the willows. Ryan helped Uta to her feet. He took hold of her shoulder and guided her ahead of him. Fan out. We need a perimeter. At Ryan's direction, they crawled into positions inside the edge of the long, narrow stand of spindly trunk trees. JB and Jack were at opposite ends of the little island. Doc and Mildred were spaced along one side. Christy, Dean, and Ryan covered the other. In a sunken area in the middle of the grove of trees, defended by all 7 blasters, lay Uta and the 3 girls. Together, the companions had a 360-degree view of the surrounding channels and all possible points of canny attack, but they were spread very thin. Some things just couldn't be helped, Ryan thought, as he scanned the tree line opposite for signs of movement. Like Benji's death. Like Uta seeing what had been done to him. Like the battle lines being drawn so that the dirt farmer's corpse lay in plain view of his family. His mutilated remains were unrecognizable to the 6-year-old, who, though terrified, didn't seem to really understand what had happened. The oldest child kept staring wide-eyed back through the trees at her father's body, tears streaming down her cheeks. She understood, all right. Ryan watched Uta reach over and touch her daughter's small chin, gently turning her face away from the sight.
Don't look.
Doc's voice filtered through the trees to his back.
If you have formulated a defensive strategy, my dear Ryan, I'm sure we all would appreciate hearing the essential details. Or do you intend the impending conflict to be a free-for-all?
When you see the cannies break from cover, give a shout, but hold your fire. We want them to cross the channels. On my signal, we pull back to the center of the island. Let them follow us into the bush. That way they'll be backlit and they'll have to fight the tangle of limbs to get at us.
Sucker the bastards in, then wipe out the whole bunch.
You got it. Otherwise, we'll be swatting them off our tails all the way to perdition.
As masterful as ever.
Anticipating the fight to come, Ryan hurriedly hollowed out a space in the bed of dry leaves beside him. With its long barrel, the scoped sniper rifle was going to be next to useless in the thick undergrowth at the island's center, and if he tried to lug it with him, it would only hang up in the brush and slow him as he backed into position. After carefully covering the rifle with leaves, he pulled his 9mm Sig Sauer P226 from its well-worn holster. He took an extra, full magazine from his pants pocket and set it on the ground close to hand. Then he resumed his scan of the opposite tree line, which was separated from him by 75 feet of open stream channel. There was no sign of them yet, but the branches were so tightly interlaced on the other side that the entire pack of cannies could have been inches back from the edge and still remain invisible to him. A minute or two passed, and he shifted the pistol to his left hand and wiped the sweat from his right palm onto his pant leg. Ryan knew the all-out attack would come soon. As a rule, cannies weren't big on patience, and they had already waited longer than they'd wanted to. They could probably smell the children.
Coming at me! I got 3! No, 4!
A feint was Ryan's first thought. It made no sense for the bastards to hit one end of the island. It meant that they'd have to travel through the maximum amount of brush to reach their victims. Ryan grabbed the extra mag.
Hold back!
Even as he started to scoot back from the perimeter, he caught movement in the other tree line. Dark shapes rushed out from cover and into the stream bed. The end-on attack was indeed a trick. The main force was charging straight at him.
Got 10 on this side!
Correction. Half the main force was charging at him. Fire blast, Ryan thought as he reverse crawled. There had to be a couple dozen of them. They weren't yelling or whooping it up as they advanced, wanting to get as close as possible without raising an alarm. Backing through the undergrowth as fast as he could, he caught sight of Christy and Dean doing the same thing on his right. Further over on that side, JB's boot heels and backside came into view. By the time Ryan reached Uta and the girls, Doc, Mildred, and Jack had closed in as well, and the children were ringed with outpointing blasters. The Canny's plan was to drive a double wedge through the middle of the island, to split the companions' force, giving themselves an opportunity to snatch up the children. Mildred and Christy covered each of the girls with their own bodies. Uta shielded the baby with hers. To get at their intended prey, the Canny's were going to have to kill them all. And before that happened, Ryan vowed, Uta and the girls would get mercy bullets in the brain. At the farthest reaches of his sight, almost lost amid the confusion of leaves and branches, which were pierced by narrow shafts of sunlight, Ryan glimpsed moving shadows. No matter how careful the Kennys tried to be, they couldn't enter the tightly packed stand of trees without making noise. As they dropped to their bellies and snaked into the bush, branches creaked, leaves rustled. The one-eyed man waited, likewise on his stomach, with the sweat rolling down his face and dripping off his chin. It was hotter than rad blazes in among the willow roots, and so dusty it half choked him to draw breath. A twig snapped not 6 feet in front of him. Then the backlit silhouette of a head and shoulders popped up. The canny scout was close enough to spit on. To Ryan's left, Doc rose slightly, the Lamaze hammer already cocked. It was a fire-at-will situation, and that was just what Doc did. The massive pistol boomed in his hand, sending forth a yard-long tongue of flame and a boiling cloud of white smoke. At such close range, the blast from the pistol's shotgun barrel was nothing short of awesome. Its load of steel and glass splinters scoured the flesh and sinew from the canny, forehead to chin, and emptied his eye sockets, the heat flash turning his hair into a halo of fire. At the Lamaze roar, the other cannies abandoned stealth, jumped up from the ground, and threw themselves headlong into the fray. Knowing their main chance was to overwhelm their quarry, they crashed through the walls of branches from both sides of the island at once, screaming at the tops of their lungs and firing their weapons. Unlike the high-powered cased cartridge blasters Ryan and his friends carried, the Canny's black powder pistols couldn't shoot through tree limbs to reach their targets. No matter how they angled their shots, the maze of intervening tree limbs deflected the flight of their crossbow bolts. To bring knives and clubs into play, they had to get within arm's reach, which was something the companions were determined to avoid. Ryan put a 9mm slug dead center into an onrushing form. When the canny didn't even slow, he followed up with two more quick shots. The body fell forward, arms outstretched, splintering the frail branches and crashing in a cloud of dust to the ground. Right on the first canny's heels was another. Dean, who lay about 10 feet to the left, blazed away with his 9mm Browning high power as the second canny leaped over his fallen comrade and drove onward through the brush. Though he hit the man in the stomach and chest, the 9mm slug seemed to have no stopping power. Ryan took careful aim and shot the man through the face, which not so neatly did the trick. The body had barely slammed to earth when the canny behind jumped it and threw himself forward. They were cutting a path to their prey, paved by their own corpses. Christie's blaster cracked twice more, then the hammer snapped softly on a spent primer. Ryan raised up and fired three parabellum rounds into the oncoming canny's neck and head. The man dropped to his knees, then his face, falling away, to reveal yet another charging figure behind him. Dean killed that one, as well as the one that came after, while Christy hurriedly dumped the spent shells from her revolver, then fumbled with the speed loader. Before she had the live rounds chambered, Ryan had shot two more canny's, then the SIG slide locked back. He was out of ammo too. He thumbed the release button, dumping the empty mag into the dirt. Through the rising clouds of dust, more cannies charged, a seemingly endless wave of them. The path of bodies now ended no more than 15 feet from where he, Dean, and Christy lay. Behind them, JB was cutting loose with his 12-gauge, firing, pumping, firing into the canny rush. Double-aught buckshot blasted tree limbs, sending bark, leaves, and chunks of canny flying. Then JB let out a startled yelp, which made Ryan glance up just as he was raising the fresh mag to the SIG's butt. The M4000 dropped on its shoulder sling as JB grabbed at his left arm. Something dark protruded from the middle of it, crossways to the bone. Over the steady firing of Jack's Colt Python, Mildred's 38 and Doc's 44, Ryan heard crashing footballs. Close. Slapping the full mag home, he turned to find a heavyset Kenny shoving a hogleg Remington new army pistol into Christie's face.
Dad!
It was a moment frozen.